My guest at this time is Andrew C. McCarthy. He is a former assistant U.S. attorney. He is also a contributing editor at National Review and the author of numerous books, the most recent of which is Faithless Execution. We want to get his thoughts today on revelations that the FBI is actually pursuing two separate investigations that are linked to the Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. One is the newly re-intensified investigation into her emails and classified information that was stored on a private server. And the separate one that we've learned about through the reporting of Brett Baer over at Fox News is that the FBI is very actively investigating allegations of pay-to-play between the Clinton Foundation, its donors, and Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. So a lot to dig through. And Andy, it's good to have you with us. Thanks for your time today.
Greg, it's my pleasure.
What's the biggest bombshell here for you?
The fact that the investigation into the Clinton Foundation is apparently so far along and regarded as so serious, at least within the walls of the FBI, and therefore, coupled with that, the fact that the Justice Department seems to have made it very difficult for the FBI to conduct that investigation.
What do we know for sure is going on with the Justice Department and what they are and are not allowing or encouraging FBI special agents to do?
Well, I can't say I know for sure. I'm relying on reporting, just like everybody else is, the reporting that Brett did that you alluded to, and also Devlin Barrett's reports, which have been very enlightening in the Wall Street Journal in the last few days. But what we think we know is that the FBI has been investigating the Clinton Foundation for over a year. I think it is on the theory that I have argued, which is that it's a pay-to-play operation and kind of an end run around campaign finance limitations, especially the ones that keep foreign contributions out of American politics. The idea would be that the Clinton Foundation was used as a scheme by the Clintons and their confederates to monetize their political influence, and particularly Mrs. Clinton's awesome political influence as Secretary of State. So that would be the theory behind it. I've argued that I would approach it as a RICO violation. I'm not saying for sure that they've committed one, but a prosecutor always has to have a kind of a framework, a criminal framework in mind when you conduct an investigation. Otherwise, you don't really know what you're looking for, so you have to kind of try to impose a little order on it. What we think we know is that there's five different or at least four different U.S. attorney's offices throughout the country. I'm sorry, I should say FBI field offices throughout the country that have participated in this investigation in some way. And the interesting thing that we learned this week, which I think was just mind-blowing, was that the agents on the Clinton Foundation aspect of the investigation were seeking access to emails that were recovered during the classified information aspect of the investigation, specifically emails that were located on the computers of Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson, two top aides to Mrs. Clinton, and they were thwarted, that is, the agents were, in the attempt to get access to these emails by prosecutors, federal prosecutors in the Eastern District of New York, which is in Brooklyn. The reason I think that's so interesting is that the Eastern District of New York is the former U.S. Attorney's Office that was headed by Loretta Lynch before she was elevated to Attorney General by President Obama. So Mrs. Lynch still has very strong ties to that office. It's chock-a-block with people that she's hired, trained, and supervised, and it's to me, as someone who doesn't really believe in coincidences, it's very interesting that that investigation and that call ended up with prosecutors in the Eastern District of New York, even though it's not clear to me why the Brooklyn U.S. Attorney's Office there would have venue over either the Clinton emails aspect of the investigation or the Clinton Foundation aspect of it. That's not immediately apparent. But in any event, the lawyers in Brooklyn evidently stopped the FBI agents in New York from getting access to those critical emails. And it looks like, at least according to the Wall Street Journal's reporting, that the agents then wanted to try to bring the case, instead of being in Brooklyn, to the Southern District of New York, which is my old haunts back when I was a federal prosecutor. That's the office in Manhattan. And they were told no by the FBI. And the reporting indicates that they were told no by FBI brass. And in particular, the FBI official who refused to allow them to go, as he put it, prosecutor shopping, was the top official whose wife received $675,000 in campaign cash and in-kind contributions from political action committees controlled by Terry McAuliffe, who, of course, is a longtime Clinton aide and actually was at one time a board member of the Clinton Foundation.
Andy, let me get into a couple of things real quickly here. You've talked about how FBI brass and certainly the Justice Department have kind of thrown out roadblocks in front of these investigations. The FBI obviously can't bring charges on its own. That's something that the Justice Department would have to do. As a former U.S. attorney, do you have the freedom to bring charges based on what the FBI presents to you, or does the Justice Department ultimately make that call?
It's usually, Greg, something that depends on the charges you're going to bring. So, for example, I've suggested that the Clinton Foundation ought to be investigated as a racketeering offense. RICO, the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act, if you bring a case under that set of statutes, they do require U.S. attorneys or, I'm sorry, attorney general approval or main justice approval. But most of the statutory violations of federal law can be brought by U.S. attorneys' offices without any approval or you know, pre-authorization by the Justice Department. Of course, when you're dealing with a case that has the kind of political and national security implications that the Clinton investigation has, there is likely to be very heavy Justice Department involvement. So the normal chains of command and lines of authority probably aren't that relevant. I'm sure that I'd be very, very surprised if any U.S. attorney in the country, and mind you, I think all of the U.S. attorneys in the country now have been appointed by President Obama. I don't think anyone is going to haul off and indict the Clinton Foundation and anyone connected with the Clinton Foundation without getting a green light from the Justice Department.
Andy, in terms of getting evidence needed to get to the point of prosecution, a lot of people thought the classified information one was fairly simple, and then ultimately the FBI didn't recommend, and the Justice Department didn't charge. If they don't go after racketeering and they actually go after the tangled web of alleged pay-to-play here, how hard is that to prove?
It's a tough case, and the Supreme Court has made it tougher in the last term by its McDonald decision, which made it clear that if you're going to bring a bribery case against the public official, you really have to have pretty clear proof of a quid pro quo. I think the FBI agents think they do have very strong proof of quid pro quos arising out of the Clinton Foundation. And when I say it's a tough case, I should be clear. What I mean by that is not that it's so difficult to convict people if you have the evidence. The thing is, it's a much more complicated case in its way than a classified information case. For all the seriousness and heavy penalties of a classified information violation, it's a pretty straightforward proof. You know, the classified information is either in a place where it's not supposed to be or it's not. A big fraud case, a big white-collar fraud case that may have a money laundering angle, fraud angles, obstruction of justice, lying to investigators and the like, these are charges that can be proved, and prosecutors in these big U.S. attorney's offices prove them all the time. But it's not a case that gets put together in a short period of time. It's usually, you know, something that has to be meticulously assembled. And it's complicated by the fact, I would say, that, you know, suddenly, seemingly just a few days ago, potentially as many as 650,000 emails fell into the lap of the FBI on account of this Wiener investigation of the former congressman who's married to Mrs. Clinton's close aide, Huma Abedin. Some percentage of that 650,000 emails is obviously relevant to the Clinton investigations.
And let me direct my last question to that last point you made, because you've gotten quite a bit of media attention for making this point. You are quite dumbstruck by the fact that that computer wasn't pursued earlier in the initial Clinton classified information email investigation. Why do you think it wasn't?
Well, I think that the way that the Clinton emails investigation was conducted, the Justice Department made it very difficult for the FBI to do the investigation, particularly by not using the grand jury. It's by the grand jury's power to compel evidence by subpoena that the FBI usually is able to get people to be cooperative, because they have the power of legal compulsion behind them. If they lose that power, then they have to kind of cajole and convince people to be cooperative and turn over things that they don't want to turn over so the FBI can examine them. So I think a big part of it was the fact that the Justice Department made it so difficult for the FBI. I think another big part of it is that there's so many lawyers in the Clinton orbit, and a lot of them would have been subjects of this investigation. The FBI is always concerned when you're dealing with lawyers' computers that there could be attorney-client privilege issues, and it's a big hassle for them. So if it's clear that the Justice Department is not supportive of the fact that they're trying to gather this evidence in the first place, there's going to be a natural enervating kind of ethos that takes hold, and I think dissuades people from doing things that are difficult, like trying to fight over whether they can examine the computers of lawyers.
Andy, it's a fascinating story that just keeps adding new dimensions all the time. Thank you very much for your expertise today.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Andrew C. McCarthy is a former assistant U.S. attorney. He is a contributing editor at National Review, the author of numerous books, most recently Faithless Execution. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.